interrupting the current neo-eucaronial, climate-challenged, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting Episode BTWRLM 626. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport. So get you behind the woodshed, because you don't know what you missed until you make the switch and get you behind the woodshed. But that does the reality, because you can't go wrong when you get behind the woodshed. And before, it's not a spectator sport. You have to get here. Breaking. Our fertility study is now out. Lower birth rates are only among women vaccinated against COVID-19. Did we see that coming, folks? Again, the proofs are coming through. This is not, again, to gloat that you didn't take it. This is a serious problem. 80% of the population in the world got these shots. We're going to have serious problems as we go along. A study of national data from the Czech Republic shows that the birth rate was approximately 30% lower among women vaccinated for COVID-19 compared to those that were unvaccinated. This study is important because it's the first to analyze birth rate in relation to COVID-19 vaccination status at conception in a large national data set. The findings provide a preliminary explanation for the sudden, unexpected, but enduring decline in birth rates seen in many of the countries with a high rate of COVID vaccination among the fertile population. I continue to want to interject, these were not vaccinations. So these studies say they're vaccinations, but they were not. A matter of local communicable disease law, even in the Czech Republic. They're not vaccines. These jabs were not anything close to what a vaccine would be. They were, under American law, defined as bioweapons. How do we get there? They weren't vaccines. They didn't have that dual use that Rand Paul allowed Fauci to testify to existed, the dual use. But in fact, it didn't. And all Rand Paul had to do to kill that, and he didn't, was to point to the local communicable disease law and catch Fauci right there on the lying to the Senate. But he didn't do it. And so I told you about that then. Everyone's talking about Rand Paul bringing Fauci to justice, accountability. No, it's probably not going to happen. But likely not ever. You haven't seen it yet. The facts were down before Trump even let it go at us at warp speed. So we're now seeing what was early on stated in the studies. If you listen behind the woodshed, you hear the results now from more determined people to look at the studies and the consequences and the numbers, if you will, that what they call the epidemiology now. And I have the link for you too, the rates of successful conception according to COVID-19 vaccination data from the Czech Republic, and get that to read it, inform yourself. Again, there's things you can do to get rid of these spike proteins. However, I'm hearing some really horrendous stories about, for males, the sperm of one, I think it was a deceased body that had an autopsy done on it, that was vaccinated, but the sperm was completely the spike protein. It had replicated itself completely. And we knew this went right to the organs, reproductive organs immediately in women and men. And we got that other notice that said if the male that was working with the test subjects had a woman of childbearing age, they couldn't contact with them. They had to be very careful. So there's all the signs were there, and so now we're getting the results. And so make sure, on the other hand, you stay long enough to not be only a spectator. Breaking news as well. Again, these are preprints, and I don't care right now that they are. I think they're going to be. There's apparently people who do these reports and do the studies. They're doing analysis. They're having questions on whether or not some of these comparisons are fully accurate. But to my mind, I think I'd rather be using that precautionary principle and understanding we have some serious problems, and I don't need someone looking at a data set after the fact when they were telling us coming into this thing it was bad. We have another breaking study now in Florida. Adults who received initial two doses of Pfizer BNT162b2 had significantly higher risk of 12-month all-cause cardiovascular COVID-19 and non-COVID-19 mortality compared to carefully matched Moderna mRNA 1273 recipients. Sensitivity analysis and negative control outcomes indicate that the findings are robust and provide no indication of a meaningful residual unobserved co-founding bias. The results raise questions and concerns here regarding the potential adverse impact of COVID mRNA vaccination on all-cause mortality, underscore the importance of considering non-specific vaccine effects and specifically all-cause mortality when evaluating vaccines. Well, that was supposed to be done early on, that the CDC and the FDA dispensed with, remember? And the important part about this, I understand, is the negative controls that they used. So this is a better analysis on this one. Coming right out of Florida, a lot of folks in Florida got this jab, and a lot of older folks did as well. And you got, again, remember the comorbidities, they're just targeting all that. And Russia, though, on the other hand, is here to help if Trump is not at warp speed. Russian scientists develop a mini-lab for emergency and intensive therapy care. Scientists from Saratov State Medical University have developed a mini-laboratory for non-invasive blood analysis. So those of us that didn't get the jab, we still have to watch out. We may be killed by our doctors. And part of it is being transported to the hospital when you have certain conditions. In this, according to developers, this portable device will allow emergency physicians and intensivists to measure hematocritic, the blood ratio and total blood volume to red blood cell volume, and monitor blood viscosity during the patient's transportation without waiting for lab results. The university emphasizes this is particularly critical for severe surgical patients. In trauma, burns, hemorrhages, and acute abdominal conditions, such patients often develop hypovolemia, a mismatch between circulating blood volume and vascular capacity, leading to severe complications. Key indicators of hypovolemic disorders are blood viscosity and hematocrit, the percentage of red blood cells per blood volume unit. However, current measurement methods require blood sampling. Researchers at VI Razmuvovsky, Saratov State Medical University, have created a device that they describe as a mobile mini-lab. Its operation is based on analyzing pulse waves in brachia and radial arteries. Beyond blood vessel viscosity and hematocrit, the device uses two sensors to measure in real time the vascular wall elasticity, the heart rate, and the blood pressure. Project lead Olav Serov, professor at the Department of Hospital Surgery, explained to Sputnik that these parameters alert physicians to fluid deficiency-related hypovolemic disorders and indicate the likelihood of a fatal event occurring from the cardiovascular system, cardiovascular risk measurement. He provided a clinical example. Quote, acute intestinal obstruction with its high mortality rates always involves hypovolemic disorders as fluids shift from vascular to intestines, between 5 to 7 liters of fluid. While correcting these water electrolyte imbalances requires lab tests, these aren't available during transportation. Quote, if the heart can't handle the fluid load, pulmonary or cerebral edema may develop, an even graver danger, to Serov noted. But, so who knew? Well, literally, life in the balance here. And here they have a machine now to let us be those active non-spectators as they attempt to use us as their profit margin. But here we have a little machine that may help us get on through in a very critical position. As the professor noted, due to this, during transportation to the hospital, patients with intestinal obstructions are either not given intravenous infusions at all, or receive no more than 400 milliliters, whereas 1.5 to 2 liters are needed. As a result, irreversible kidney dysfunction occurs. Therefore, time cannot be wasted during the transportation of such a patient, the doctor is convinced. So take note, if someone went into chewing and swallowing their hangnail, emergency situation, but comes out with irreversible kidney function, maybe you've been a victim of medical malpractice. WHO data shows 20% of the global deaths result from inadequate pre-hospital care Professor Tassara believes timely pre-hospital volemic correction effectively constitutes preoperative preparation for intestinal obstruction cases. Moreover, as the doctor believes, the developed intelligent system will be useful not only in the pre-hospital stage, but also in the hospital, as even in the intensive care unit, blood sampling and its further analysis to obtain information about hypovolemic disorders lead to time loss, which the intensivist cannot afford. Hypovolemia correction must begin immediately, and its adequacy must be continuously monitored. The university confirmed the device, got a patent. So when you know, folks, all the people being treated all this time by risk management instead of good care, sounds like an emergency services need to get these sensors, even if they're from Russia. Then why don't we have them? But it's interesting how we can work this out. Didn't realize it was such a critical condition, and here you have it. Almost have a tricorder coming if we think about it. And I got the link on that Florida mortality rates for you as well, behind the Woodshed blogcaster there. Going back to that, 12-month all-cause mortality after initial COVID-19 vaccination and Pfizer-BioNTech or mRNA-1273 among adults living in Oregon. Again, there was no vaccination. It was a bioweapon hit by the military, and as a matter of law, you just go through the law to find this. And yet they seem to be outside the law, don't they? Especially when you're in an occupied territory or an occupied country and don't realize that, as I've been trying to show us. We have the Russians trying to show us how to save ourselves, and we have evidence the CDC and the FDA could care less. As we move over into the UK, as Moderna risks UK suspension over cash and toys offered to kids. The corruption knows no depths, I suppose. Now we see that in Palestine, don't we? Kids, there's no innocence in Palestine. All the kids get murdered and thrashed and tore apart, blowed up. A British watchdog has criticized the BioNTech firm over recruitment practices involving children in coronavirus booster studies. Not that it wasn't a vaccine, but because they were bribing little kids. U.S. big pharma company Moderna could be suspended or expelled from U.K. trade body after breaches of industry rules, including offering children cash and teddy bears to take part in a COVID vaccine trial. Funny, no one was interested when the companies and the government bribed and threatened the mothers and fathers with their jobs and the very means of supporting those little ones during that great COVID swindle. Really a crime continuing all these years. Moderna, and this is a good thing, them getting kicked out, because they're not going to go after that bioweapon, are they? Moderna, which joined the Association of British Pharmaceutical Industry, now faces an audit that could result in its suspension or expulsion. A new ruling is expected to be published in the coming days, according to the Telegraph. If sanctioned, it would become the 10th firm to face suspension from the ABPI in the last 40 years. The UK's drug watchdog, the Prescription Medicines Code and Practice Authority, said Moderna's lack of transparency was unacceptable and damaged the industry's reputation. The findings showed how readily Moderna put profit ahead of the health and safety of children and laid bare just how little regard it has had for the regulatory system that was supposed to keep it honest. Molly Kingsley, founder of the Us for Them, told that newspaper. But in this cat-box cover-up, isn't it interesting? The authority is more interested in the business bribes than the authority allowed the pharma companies to peddle bioweapons to the people. Bioweapons transferred by the military around the world, and which brought the medical field into unacceptable and damaged industry reputation the teddy bears are said to have caused. And where the authority did nothing about the breach to local communicable disease law to allow what it knew beyond the safe and effective fraud was going on, if they just applied it. COVID-19 vaccines, including Moderna's Spikevax. You understand what they just said there? You're being spiked with the spike protein. May lead to side effects in minors, such as a pain at the injection site, fatigue, headache, fever, and in rare cases, myocarditis and pericarditis. according to health authorities. According to health authorities, well, we just have a study that said you're going to die. How's that? You're going to die. It doesn't matter if you're old or young. And that meaning as well that they allowed these experiments to be done on minors. Again, it was an experiment that they were going to bribe these kids into and did. That was unacceptable and doesn't damage industry and government reputation. I hope we're paying attention to how they do these standards, that there is none. And it's more of an embarrassment on they're worried about the system, what the system looks like, than actual safe and effective medicines that actually do what they're told, or we're told that they do. So now that the great COVID swindle was set up for a lot of things, I've been mentioning one coming on us for the last 20 years. Everyone who sees them is up in arms about the 15-minute cities. I've said you already live in about a 2-minute city, the way they have this thing really set up. You can't really go where you're not allowed since 9/11. If we want to go, we've got to go back that far. As I told you, in 2019, as I was predicting the, we didn't call it the great COVID swindle then, it was the haystack of noise wrapped around this attack that they were going to come, as I was mentioning at the end of November in 2019. I referenced back Operation Hindsight 2020 back to 9/11. So this is why this is an ongoing thing relative to that, why this story becomes important and what it's led to and where it's going. I've been talking about these IDs, and last episode it was the voter ID, so, you know, you can now identify that you're what. You don't even know what you're being identified as, but you're going to get one now because you need to have it to vote. You're an American, you think. But now we'll see now the extent where I told you this is a digital centralized database, and you will only go as far as you are told and allowed. You know, I've heard lots of screaming about the 15-minute cities. No one understands they already live in a maybe less than 2-minute city. It's all in your phone as well, or not. We hear now, Arlington Cemetery visitors will need real ID. People hoping to visit Arlington National Cemetery will soon contend with an added layer of bureaucracy as the new real ID rules come into effect. Those driving into Arlington National Cemetery, the resting place of approximately 400,000 U.S. service members, veterans, and their families, will need to be real ID compliant by May 7th. In 2005, following recommendations from a 9/11 commission, Congress passed the Real ID Act, which set minimum security standards for state-issued IDs. It's got to put the emphasis here. What does the federal government have to do with the state ID? And I've talked to you about it. I've mentioned it. All you got to do is go. What authority issues those IDs, and look at the background of that. We'll look at the authority there, and you'll see how the federal government has this ability at this point. And you'll start to see how your state's sovereignty has been subverted right before your eyes, and everybody thinks this is okay. It is being fully implemented from May, almost 20 years after the act passed. It means that Americans and permanent residents aged 18 and older will soon only be able to pass through airport security, enter federal government, build federal governments, and access other locations if they have real ID or other form of identification like a passport. So remember that little bit right there, but I have to ask you, when you're in this country, the United States, why do you need a passport to get into a federal facility? Maybe you should think about that. Think how they've done this. The statement said, understand these are all equals. These presentations have equality between them, why they're equal, why they can be used in order. And then you got to look at what the authorities are behind them, and you'll start to see, hopefully you'll start to see a different picture about the way this place has been rewired. The United States of America has been altered right before everyone's eyes over time, and justified by the people. The statement said that the ID rules applies to funeral attendees, family pass holders, honor flights, contractors who do not possess a Department of Defense common access card or an automated installation badge, family hired photographers and florists who drive into the cemetery via Memorial Avenue, Joint Base Meyer Henderson Hall, or the service complex gate. Now, why is it tapped for driving? Consider these things. Visitors, again, I'm just not talking about the news. Actually, this is a pretty horrendous story in my mind, but I'm not talking about the news. I'm showing us how they are infiltrating and incrementally getting into every aspect of us, our lives, and how they're diminishing our, what we thought was the right to travel, what we thought was the right to be free. We get back to that presumption of innocence. I told you they took it in 9/11. They used it as an excuse. Visitors who walk, take metro, or get dropped off at the cemetery will not have to present real ID, according to the statement issued by Arlington National Cemetery. Now, listen to that. Getting into federal buildings. Do you everybody drive into federal buildings? So maybe this one's not going to last too long either. In addition, visitors who arrive by vehicle parked in the Welcome Center parking garage will likewise not need to present the real ID. Real ID compliant cards feature a star marking on the upper right portion of the card, indicating federal compliance and proof of identity required to board commercial aircraft. To get one, applicants must present valid ID along with a proof of identity. There's so much to think about here. Maybe people don't do it. It took me a long time working this through. You start questioning everything. Is it really proof of identity, or just what is acceptable that they say that you present is the proof of your identity? And if you don't prove it, don't have it, how do you not exist? So what are you existing for? And this gets back into, as I said before, you have a person. You are not a person relative to some of this. So the applicants must present a valid ID along with a proof of identity for this, such as a passport or a certified birth certificate. Well, they just said a passport was all you needed. Why now this? Proof of their social security number and date of birth and two documents verifying state residency, like a utility bill, credit card statement, or rental agreement. Now, I thought the social security number was never supposed to be used for IDing anything, but there you have it. I understand they claim it's changed, but when you look closely, that hasn't actually. And how are they identifying you? Again, this is all on your submission of paperwork anyway. So they accept this information from you that way, but they won't agree that you have a presumption of innocence or that your word means anything proper anymore. The statement added that if you do not have a real ID compliant state driver's license, the following forms of identification will be accepted. Now, if you read this story, you see it's a possessive driver's license. I've told you before, there's no such thing as a possessive driver's license. It's the state's document. And the driver does not possess it. It's evidence of something is what that ends up being. It's not the driver's as a possession. And so this article, again, misleads people, I suppose. And it's a big deal that it's not possessive. The form of identification will be accepted. And I said, listen for these lists, because I wasn't going to read all this, but I realized, look at what the list, all these are equal. And you can get a common denominator of the truly underlying authority about why, and get us back to 9/11 and what that caused in this country. And I'll just maybe throw the punchline out. The emergency, the war powers type of information that came out that the government now relies upon. It's all fraud, but we shift. No different than we shifted when Lincoln threw down, usurped this country. We're seeing another one happen after 9/11 to make a more perfectus union. A DOD common access card, DOD uniform services ID cards, military retiree or dependent ID, local DOD access cards and passes, defense biometric identification system card. These are going to be equivalents, remember, and look at what they're doing to these documents. And don't forget about the central databasing that's going on and the monopolizing reorganization that's going on under Trump. U.S. and foreign passports and passport cards. Transportation worker identification cards. Transportation worker identification card. Where's the state ID card come from? Where does a so-called driver's license come from? They're talking state here. Why only transportation workers? Veterans health identification cards. Federal personal identify verification cards. Non-federal PIV interoperable cards. An acceptable photo ID issued by a federally recognized tribal nation, Indian tribe, including enhanced tribal cards. What do the tribes become? What are people saying about this? And this is interesting to watch this promotion by the government. The government news is here for us, because what are people saying? Transportation Secretary Administration, TSA Administrator David Perosky, in January said, quote, identity verification is foundational for security. But the TSA agent's not people, is he? Unless they're admitting to a federal government as a corporation too. So we're not going to get what the people are saying in this article. We're going to get what the government wants you to know, that your use of the highway is DOD controlled. Otherwise, why are DOD papers acceptable? Have you looked at the 1956 Eisenhower Act over the highways? Have you looked at Title 49? And start pulling a lot of this together. I urge those who use a driver's license, he says, as a state-issued identity card as their primary form of identification to access federal facilities or board commercial passenger aircraft to ensure these credentials are real ID compliant. We are committed to engaging with the public, licensing jurisdictions, and states to facilitate a smooth transition to real ID enforcement beginning May 7, 2025. Again, the act went into play 20 years ago. It's taken everybody this long to get it organized, and they did. The states could have said no. You saw, it's not anything to do with the real ID where they say they can accept a passport. Now, I still have questions about that, but you don't need the real ID, do you? And yet they got all the states to capitulate. When you look at the real ID, everyone says, what's the problem with the real ID? It has obligations and duties that your passport and your driver's license don't to the federal government. Go read, folks. Go find this stuff out, how we're doing it to ourselves. So what about those of us that are not resident? And if a national, you don't produce evidence of residency in any state, or the volunteer, the birth certificate that they want, are you deemed an illegal alien? And if not, why not? Do you understand the problem here? See, we're too giving of certain things. And when you withhold that, or if you don't even know it exists, and then you ask the question, now it comes out a little bit different. For all those of you who want to see illegal aliens booted out of here without due process. But who does Congress represent to require papers to enjoy a vested right of ingress and egress to things once deemed public? What about your presumption of innocence? How do you feel about the government stealing your presumption of innocence without any due process? Whose are these facilities that we the people can no longer enter without our papers? But if you can't walk in the front door of a federal court without a real ID, justice being denied to you, why will you get access through the back door, chained and in handcuffs, escorted by the FBI or a federal marshal, if this is your America made great again? When will you understand this is not your country? You're an occupied people, presumed enemy combatants now, ruled by a foreign power foreign to the organic establishment. You're all illegal aliens needed to show your get to pass this sector card, now with a star, the little yellow star of privileged, apartheid segregated class. Who did the fallen in Arlington fight for here? If you can't access their final resting place by car or the courts on foot without your papers, is why America cannot be great again. But trust the plan, right, Quislings? But remember, this real ID is digital. A database is being centralized across the whole of government, is the phrase they say, more efficiently, right, P.T. Barnabas? And that database will be the U.S. system comparable to the Chinese Sesame Social Credit System, which tests loyalty to government, like your consumer loyalty cards have been indoctrinating you to accept and be familiar with and receive your benefits through at your local grocery store. And the guy here that claims he intends to make China great again, I mean America great again, the great leader here, is requiring the White House to evaluate officials' loyalty to Trump. Faithful administration of the president's policies will be a key to U.S. civil servants keeping their jobs. The Office of Personnel Management, which is the U.S. federal government's human resources arm, has been tasked with leading the evaluation program, the outlet here said that I got this article from on the RT, the only place I can see it right. According to the memo, the OPM acting director, Chuck Nezel, which were seen by the WSJ, high-ranking civil servants will be judged based on their faithful administration of the law and the president's policies. The documents described advancing Trump's agenda as the most critical element in measuring the performance of officials, the report read. Is advancing an agenda the most critical element or complying with the law? And you might say, well, it did say faithful administration of law. And I respond, the oath of office is already to be presumed adequate. And beyond that, when do you know that the order is compliant with the law, where so many lawsuits are now questioning the lawfulness of the orders advancing Trump's agenda, and as undisclosed and haphazard as it all has been? And is Trump or those unduly influential speaking into Trump's beholding nicked ear the guidance? Is this land of the law or the land of the fearless and fearsome leader Donald Kim Jong-un Trump? When do you know? When you go to court and they turn around, the Republican judges are saying, Trump, you should have known better. It's not hard to understand. When is the law imposed on an employee of the government? But does my listener see the problem with filtering out public servants that are first agenda-driven and not law-compliant? The loyalty is one thing. Lawless loyalty is quite another. An oath of allegiance is to the Constitution of the U.S., not the officer in the White House, first and foremost. When does someone know they are in faithful administration of law when the order comes from someone that seems to dispense with the law when it's convenient? Right, Satan Yehu? What about the U.S. project committing genocide and attacking pro-Semitic protests? How does that make America great again? And the due process failures around that. What about dispensing with due process makes America great again? When does one know what faithful administration of the law is when the great leader's agenda is to dispense with the law more efficiently? But didn't I report last episode, Klaus, fearless leader Schwab insisted on strict loyalty to him? And how about the political loyalty company store loyalty card you guys use, those of you that do, which is actually coming and being required in the consolidating Siberian gulag. Don't forget, I told you that third-party liability to the foreign diktats is sitting right in there with that. See, the duty of an American, including government employees, isn't to be loyal to Trump or to government or its officials, but to stay vigilant to any usurpation of law, with the attendant obligation to alter or abolish any usurpation as the people see fit. And that dear leader Donald Kim Jong-un Trump demands loyalty to him as law without the proof he is law or his orders lawful, particularly in light of the ongoing apparent corruptions. Whereas we heard last episode, the judicial branch found he couldn't follow his own EO if it were lawful, is an immediate violation of constitutional law, cannot make America great again, whether or not again. But we have brand loyalty blockchained to the Siberian Gulag on top of all this, from the great leader's son, Eric Trump, I'm still stunned how fast this is coming along, and people just love it. I don't get it. But a blockchain technology can perform financial transactions more efficiently, the president's son has said. Maybe P.T. Barnum must put that in his ear, too. Banks can face extinction within a decade if they fail to embrace blockchain technologies, U.S. President Donald Trump's son, Eric, a crypto entrepreneur, all of a sudden now, has warned. In an interview with the CNBC on Wednesday, Eric Trump lambasted what he described as the slowness and inefficiency of the traditional banking system. Quote, the modern financial system is broken. It's slow. It's expensive. Trump also launched a Bitcoin mining company called American Bitcoin in March, said he turned to digital currencies and decentralized finance when he realized that, quote, our banking system favors the ultra-wealthy, and, quote, was weaponized against the vast majority of people in our country. Probably didn't hurt that his mother and his brother got excised from the bank. I think it was Citibank, wasn't it? Yeah, kicked right on out, just for a political whim. So it probably didn't help that. But at any rate, now pumping the digitals right here. Decentralized finance platform. Is that true? Maybe the platform? Not the blockchain. Decentralized financial platforms allow individuals to conduct transactions directly with one another, often with low or no fees, something traditional banks rely on to generate income. Well, that's the only thing. Trump has argued that blockchain technology can perform all the functions of traditional banking system more efficiently. Efficiency, right, PT? There's a sucker born every minute. Barnabas? Quote, I'm telling you, if the banks don't watch what's coming, they're going to be extinct in 10 years, he said. In the interview, Eric Trump also criticized the SWIFT Interbank Financial Messaging Network as, quote, absolutely a disaster, highlighting the delays and inefficiencies in cross-border transactions. Can I interject? Isn't that what BRICS trying to solve, too? Even though Russia doesn't want out of SWIFT, and I've told you there's an adjustment and transformation going on in that global financial system at this point, going to digital. Whether or not there's a CBDC from the central banks is irrelevant. U.S. President Donald Trump's family has expanded into the cryptocurrency sector, launching a decentralized financial project called World Liberty Financial. They have also announced plans for a dollar-backed stablecoin. In 2021, major American financier services company Capital One severed ties with over 300 accounts linked to the Trump family and their businesses. The move came 2 months after January 6th Capitol riot, where Trump's supporters attempted to overturn his defeat in the 2020 presidential election. Need to study that if you think that's the truth of what happened there. Moving on here. We're here now. Last month, Eric and his brother Donald Jr. filed a lawsuit against Capital One claiming its decision to close the accounts was an attack on free speech and free enterprise and a response to their father's political views. Once a crypto critic, President Trump has changed his position on digital currencies, attracting significant industry support. You think there's a conflict of interest in the family, maybe? That all came from his son, didn't it? Right at the end right there. Since returning to the White House, his youngest son, he has pledged to make the U.S. the crypto capital of the world and to serve as a crypto president. But this is a conflict of interest then. So being he is invested in blockchaining people to the Siberian plantation. So do you all want to be chained to the Siberian plantation, capital of the world? And then the power goes out? Right, Spain? Portugal? Get a little taste of it right there. And as I read this next news, just ask yourself, where the Patriot Act presumes everyone guilty, who are the innocent citizens the order seeks to protect? Or how about when you are determined without due process to be the deportable homegrown for exercising your First Amendment rights? On the other hand, despite your right of association, apparently do not have the right to not associate with the government. And or to what extent? we can read, President Trump's nearing the symbolic marker of his second term's first 100 days. This is written right before it just happened. He's already been through that now. It's this as of the broadcast time. He issued an executive order titled Strengthening and Unleashing America's Law Enforcement to Pursue Criminals and Protect Innocent Citizens, a directive that immediately drew sharp scrutiny and prompted widespread concern among legal scholars and observers of civil-military relations. But unleashing, folks, unleashing. This order includes provisions that envision a more direct role for the United States military in civilian law enforcement activities, a prospect many experts find deeply unsettling, to say the least. The text specifically instructs the Attorney General of the Secretary of Defense and the Secretary of Homeland Security, whose budget just got proposed up, way, way up. Understand how this is working out since 9/11 again. This is our touchstone of tyranny right here. And I have to report on it when I see it because I don't know how it's not important. It's all tied to this thing they did to us. I'm hoping people are seeing this. I hope maybe you already agree with that. I'm not trying to sell anybody on the idea. Just go back and do the research you need to do to reorient what's going on. Because I think that we the people, need to break ourselves from the fact that we need these great leaders to come along because they're not here to help us. And as I've been pointing out episode after episode, there's no evidence that they're helping us. Oh, they'll speak to our aspirations, as I told you. But they're not on a way prior episode explaining the archetype thing, the archetype situation. Very insightful article was written about that. We're still here and we're watching, we're experiencing it. But we the people have to stop aspiring and act and working toward getting what we need, not waiting for it to be handed to us, because what they're handing to us is going to be more military controls. The potential deployment of military forces in domestic policing matters stands in stark contrast to long-held principles governing the separation of military and civilian authority in the United States, principles largely enshrined in the Posse Comitatus Act of 1878. This act, born of the contentious period of the Reconstruction, when federal troops were used to enforce order in the South, generally prohibits the use of Army and Air Force for domestic law enforcement purposes with limited exceptions. We're beyond the Reconstruction into the transformation. The critics of the new executive order argue that its provisions appear to contravene the spirit, if not the letter, of this foundational statute, raising significant questions about the boundaries between military power and civilian governance. How long have I been talking about this? And here we're looking at it again. I don't have the brain to know when I did all these broadcasts. They were way long ago. They were, again, probably around the 2010s, 2012, 13, somewhere in there. That's when we talked about this before. We're back in it here, folks, the threat. And they were just teasing it before. Now it's moving more concerted against it. Beyond the Posse Comitatus Act, concerns have also been voiced regarding the order's potential impact on fundamental constitutional protections, including those found in the Third Amendment, which restricts the quartering of soldiers in private homes, the Fourth Amendment, which protects against unreasonable searches and seizures, the Fifth Amendment, guaranteeing due process and the protections against self-incrimination, and the Sixth Amendment, ensuring the right of speedy trial and legal counsel. Please go to the bottom of the broadcast or pick up and read. You get to go to the link and go pick up and read the Libra Code. You don't have to be told you're in a military consequence. You got to know it by when you seize it. That's what conversations are about. Now they're putting it in writing. The prospects of military personnel trained for combat and national defense becoming involved in routine policing actions like arrest searches or crowd control introduces complexities that many believe could erode civil liberties and alter the relationship between citizens and the state in the profound ways. And I've suggested to you since Lincoln, it's not civil liberties, you got civil rights. than they are to pay taxes, paying pains and punishments, and all kinds of lists of extortions. Again, it's out there to read. Where do you read that one? If you haven't heard it yet, 42 USC 1981, and my listener should be just saying that out loud with me, just to let it be known where are you going to go read to see this, what your civil rights are. They don't talk about your civil liberties. No, those aren't presumed anymore, and you got to go fight like heck to keep them, like your presumption of innocence, like the fact that you should have a right to travel, a right of ingress and egress that's not commerce, that you are a man or a woman, not a person, that you neither are or actually control, but are deemed. The reactions from various quarters, Third Amendment, I guess, various quarters, has been swift and pointed. Commentators across the political spectrum have expressed alarm, with some describing the executive order as legitimately frightening, a phrase that underscores the depth of the apprehension it has generated. Folks, behind the woodshed, it hasn't been an apprehension. It's a fact. You don't have what you thought you had. And this is just showing it over and over and over. The specter of martial law, a state of affairs where military authority temporarily replaces a civilian rule, has been invoked by some of the potential as a potential outcome of at least a conceptual parallel to the expanded military role envisioned by the order. Well, I've already read the documents from the South, and the last one I read was about Texas, and the feds never gave up the authority there. As I told you before, when the civilian governance, now, not government, there's a commandant back there, military commandant, that says, do what we say and you'll be okay. You do what you say and you'll be okay. No one lets out that they can only rule certain ways. It's not going to come out. You'll never notice. They make a society that looks just like it's supposed to, because that's what the commandant ordered, because they can't let you in on that secret. And all you got to do is read the documents to know that you're sitting right in that, and they've made a false front, as I talked about a long time ago, a false front society that is conducive to your expectation. Such comparisons, well, perhaps hyperbolic, again, a question. I've read the documents. It's not a question. It's not hyperbolic to understand the United States was overthrown at Lincoln, at least. And then now it's been refined and reorganized and constrained and more till we got 9/11, and that was coming down to the last bits of it. To the point now, you can't even get into a cemetery without your papers. But I get to vote, you say. Real ID. People haven't really realized it. It may be a real ID, but it's not a voter card. It's not a voter ID. And that's not what that's about either. Such comparisons, while perhaps hyperbolic to some, reflect a deep-seated anxiety about the potential for the United States to move towards a more militarized form of domestic control, a scenario that many see and incompatible with the nation's democratic traditions and its commitment to civilian supremacy. Now, you see right there, they'll give you your democratic voter ID. They won't let you have that republic you were supposed to keep. And you see this article feeding the ignorance. So it's not merely hyperbolic. It's not merely thinking it's happening. It's not a potential. Go read the documents. We're there. They just don't have it to the point that people will accept it if they told you. And we're seeing those walls, those restrictions fall in people's minds already with allowing themselves to go to Real ID, getting the phone, walking themselves into the Siberian gulag, requiring all these things that you should need to live in life. In a space that's controlled by the military, ultimately. No different than the great Kobe swindle. The idea of military forces patrolling American streets or participating in law enforcement operations against citizens evokes images that run counter to the historical understanding of the military's role, which has traditionally been focused on external threats and national defense, with domestic support limited to specific, narrowly defined circumstances like disaster relief, or responding to insurrections when authorized by law. The point is that the military doesn't make it obvious, and they learn to do that. so they don't rile the natives. They don't get the natives looking. No, you think you're looking around. Oh, you see the judges. You see the you see your commissioners. You see your supervisors in the government, the civil government. You see all this stuff running. You don't realize it's being the statutes are telling them this is what you do if you come outside of this. You come outside of these constraints, you're going to be whacked. Somehow. And then we hear about things like Epstein. Wonder, where's the compromise coming? Well, it's not just there. It's all kinds of things. The executive order compels a broader reflection of the delicate balance between security and liberty and tensions that has long shaped American legal and political discourse. Well, it's long been destroyed, but we can believe there's a delicate balance. The balance is only do you, as an official, do you just do what you're told? And who's there to do that? Who are the other army in the world, around the world, and in your agencies and governments and that give the advice that these people that move in and out of offices or these employees have to listen to, but the council, the attorneys, the bar members? Very simple way to control your population, your government. All an attorney has to do is say, oh, no, you bet you can't do that. You're going to be held liable. But they won't do it. The executive order compels a broader reflection. Well, there's been a lot that does that. If this is a call to do that, please, let's start reflecting, folks. The integration of military capabilities into civilian policing raises fundamental questions about accountability, training, and appropriate use of force. Military personnel are trained for warfare operating under rules of engagement that differ significantly from the protocols governing civilian law enforcement, which are designed to protect constitutional rights and minimize harm in domestic interactions, unless you get trained by Israel, and then you see what they're doing to the Palestinians. The potential for mission creep. We even had a sheriff that we were working with at JMD who actually put that in one of the writings as he started to see what was going on. Not the way I'm telling you, but that he saw what was going on relative to the federal government and the mission creep that came in to interfere with his authority. And even that sheriff who started to see it could only go so far. He only went so far and he stopped. I've talked a little bit about that interaction. The potential for mission creep from the military's involvement expands beyond initial justifications, and the risk of normalizing for presence of armed forces in civilian life are concerns that warrant careful consideration. Shouldn't even be a consideration. As the Attorney General, Secretary of Defense, and the Secretary of Homeland Security develop their plan over the coming 90 days, the details of how this directive will be implemented and the legal interpretations that will guide its execution will be closely watched. What we see, Homeland Security, they're saying you're going to have a real ID to get into a cemetery. The debate surrounding the executive order serves as a potential reminder, just a potential reminder, of the enduring importance of maintaining a clear distinction between military and civilian functions and the vigilance required to safeguard the constitutional framework that underpins American democracy. What is Trump doing then to destroy due process in us? The path forward of these agencies, as these agencies navigate the complexities of this directive, will undoubtedly shape the future landscape of law enforcement and civil liberties in the nation. As being someone on the receiving end of agency frauds and lack of due process and lack of constraint to the rules, this is not a good situation for anybody. The agencies start making their own rules, like we've been hearing. One agent says, oh, we have another agent has this right for an administrative warrant. Well, there's really no constitutional administrative warrant, but they've given themselves permission, and that's all they need. And you go through the rules, and you go through the penalties, and the accountability that's built in. Nobody has remedy in that. And nobody none of the government is going to be held accountable by it. And I know that because I wrote about a 50-60-page complaint to the local sheriff with all those in. And I got crickets. So, your local jurisdictions are that militarily controlled function. that do exactly what the last few paragraphs of this article talk about, that I've already experienced. And Trump is bringing it on. He's bringing it more. So let us chew on some of the word salad Annie left us here. Strengthening and unleashing America's law enforcement to pursue criminals and protect innocent citizens. Remember, I've asked you, if everyone's presumed guilty after 9/11, who are these innocent citizens they're talking about? Yeah, this is the order. The previous article was not lying. Unleashing the dogs of war inside the gates. By the authority vested in me by President and Constitution and the laws of the United States of America, and I guess now he's free to say anything he wants, but at any rate, this is where the judiciary was supposed to be here to protect us. And in some part, they're doing that, but others, they haven't. So we got what we got, I guess. It is hereby ordered. Section 1, I'm not going to read the whole thing. I'm just going to read some of the quick, short highlights. Section 1, purpose and policy. Safe communities rely on the... Now, stick with me on these points, because I'm going to jump through and show you about the federal government, what's been going on all this time, when I've been telling you this is a continuum going on. And we'll see how far back it goes relative to this new transformation going on. You thought, oh, Klaus Schwab's out, WEF's out, oh, WHO, the WHO, no, that rock group, the OWL, or the little people from Whoville, but the World Health Organization, Trump booted them. I said, no, they're onshoring this stuff. They're onshoring the function of what they want, or what they want, onto your country, and it's already here just to turn everything back on. It's been here. The purpose and policy, safe communities rely on. So, I'm going to stop right there. Where have we heard safe communities before? Safe communities and communities is sustainable development goal by 2030. Quote, make cities and human settlements inclusive, safe, resilient, and sustainable. And we'll find out that ICLEI is involved. And all this is old, old information I talked to over a decade ago. You go read what the Sustainability Goal 11 is to see this. Safe cities. Safe habitats. Safe settlements. Make cities safe. Trump says, we're going to make safe communities. Oh, because that's said, okay, we're going to get all technical. It says cities. Okay, we're going to keep going. What have I said about Trump onshoring the sustainable development function as he feigns eliminating U.S. involvement? What have I said about the potential that full of themselves ignorant billionaire boys could be used to implement the future that they want for you, promoting it as the most beautiful thing, most terrific thing you've ever seen? Trump doesn't have better advisors if he intends to make America great again. Is Trump that unterrific? Can you believe this corruption? When else and how long have we heard mention of safe cities and safe communities from the White House? Let's go to the Clinton White House. Safe cities will be strong cities in the 21st century. And I want you to pay attention. This is safe cities, but they'll be strong cities. The incremental, step-by-step, overtime transformation that's going on. In this article, or this document on the archive of the Clinton Archives and archives.gov, you'll find a statement saying safe cities will be strong cities in the 21st century. The president's budget proposal includes a 21st century crime bill that will, one, help communities hire and redeploy at least 30,000 new officers to help reduce crime. Two, to enlist probation and parole officers, school officials, and faith-based organizations to take our streets back from crime, and three, give police high-tech tools to fight crime, from digital mugshots to crime mapping computers in squad cars. Remember, this is back in Clinton. So we'd go, oh, safe cities will be strong cities. Let's go to Obama archive, announcing strong cities, strong communities. You see the transition going on. We're moving into those strong communities. Which move into safe. Remember, don't forget that. Safe for whom, though? When you're presumed guilty. We can read, that's why the White House is excited today to announce the launch of Strong Cities, Strong Communities Initiative. Strong Cities, Strong Communities is a new interagency pilot initiative that aims to strengthen neighborhoods, towns, cities, and regions around the country by strengthening the capacity of local governments to develop and execute their economic vision and strategies. That's capacity building to a military vision. Strong Cities, Strong Communities bolsters local governments by providing necessary technical assistance and access to federal agency expertise and creating new private and public and private sector partnerships by leveraging existing assets, providing new resources, and fostering new connections at the local and national level. Strong Cities, Strong Communities will support towns and cities as they develop comprehensive plans. There's your ICLEI. Comprehensive plans for their communities and invest in economic growth and job creation. Now, leveraging assets is the local property tax payer paying to implement the various foreign programs, just as you heard mentioned in a foreign trade zones video that Clint Richardson made, and I described and brought forward a couple episodes ago. You didn't hear anything about that crime stuff in the Clinton, that Clinton mentioned, either in Obama, though, did you? So what you see, what happens there is that Obama is soft-pedaling the federal takedown. The crimes part, where they're now going to bring the military a little tighter. We've already seen a little bit of this through the 9/11, but now Trump's now going to help it up. Trump's picking it back up today in his new order. Now we move into just another document. I'm going to just give these to you. You can just quickly look to see they're there. And this document is entitled The United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, the WHO General Program of Work 2019 to 2023, and the International Safe Communities. A number of international safe communities are displaying increasing interest in the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. The International Safe Communities Certifying Center is seeking to establish a formal relations with the World Health Organization. Let me remind you, Clint Richardson's pointing out that you have to get a permission to be in a foreign trade zone through, I believe it was the Rockefeller Group, remember? That's the same type of permission right here that Trump is invoking. But safe and effective, folks. Safe communities of which the describing literature, such as this next link, preparatory ministerial meeting for the summit of the future, will state such things here. Page 4, you turn down. Safe communities cannot thrive where violent crime and extremism are endemic. What's happened with the FBI and extremism since 9/11 in the United States? And the global climate and biodiversity are threatened when, or suggesting that law enforcement community is going to implement Agenda 2030. And we read down back up at page 3, the summit will be a unique milestone towards sustainable development, reform multilateral frameworks, and an effective collective security system. At the halfway point to achieving Agenda 2030, we face many challenges, this article says, and gaps. At Interpol, we are keenly aware of the criminal threat landscape and the importance of fundamental nexus between security and development. As the political declaration adopted at this week's SDG Summit, Sustainable Development Goals Summit, states, quote, sustainable development cannot be realized without peace and security, and peace and security will be at risk without sustainable development. Now remember, long ago, Interpol is allowed to do extrajudicial or administrative renditions. So when I'm talking about things going on in the UK, don't underestimate what I'm explaining to people. Don't underestimate how close the connection is here. Or we can continue on this, focusing this, that this is a UN sustainable development that the presidents of the United States are implementing, now coming to strong communities. And we get to, we can read a blog that says that you'll find, I'll give you the link, that this focus on public safety combined with strategic use of smart city data is essential to fostering sustainable, productive, and safe communities. Okay, so this is an integration of all of that that's foreign to the United States Trump is now implementing is a safe community through the strong communities, through the safe cities that all just implement the UN sustainability goals that Trump says he doesn't want anything part of. This is BTWRLM 626. So back to the order and read a little bit further. I want to familiarize you. Right off the bat, he talks right about these safe communities and what that starts to talk to. The safe communities rely on the backbone and heroism of tough and well-equipped police force, Section 1 reads. Militarily equipped police force as well, apparently, to aggressively implement Agenda 2030. Just go back through the tabs and you'll see what I'm pulling through together here. And I do this reverse. I went through it. Well, here it comes again. Let's go get the basic proof for people to see. Any one of these you can dive into and get more understanding of what's really going on and what Trump is really doing. The result will be a law-abiding society in which tenacious law enforcement officers protect the innocent. Violations of law are not tolerated, and American communities are safely enjoyed by all their citizens again. But the PATRT Act presumes there are no innocents but terrorists, extremists, just like in Palestine. But as to that little detail, what perfect world does Trump live in that he denies exists? By the way, that the police are pure as the driven snow and glacial flows, that they need more protection in oppressing people. That's what this thing goes on to do. Remember, Trump doesn't care about due process, and impracticability is a license to steal your rights. It's a police state. It does not make America great again. Where's the impracticability? It's in the order for the picking up of the aliens that he puts together. And I shall be getting that pretty soon. We'll see it. It just ties together. But remember, you're an alien. You don't think of that you are, but you are. Go read the federal law. And all they look at is a person. You have, but you're not are, and you do not control. It's what the government controls. Section 3 of this order, empowering state and local enforcement. I provide new best practices to state and local law enforcement to aggressively police communities against all crimes. Again, aggressively. They are already killing here people in the streets. Because I feared for my life. Because we got a call for a welfare check. Someone says you're threatening people with a weapon. You have a broken taillight. You're protesting genocide. You look homegrown to me. Quit resisting. Section 4, using national security assets for law and order, shall increase the provision of excess military and national security assets in local jurisdictions to assist state and local law enforcement. Yes, we need more SWAT raps patrolling the streets. Yes, we need more national security problems in our communities now, brought in by the federal government, by this order. Section 5, holding state and local officials accountable. The Attorney General shall pursue all necessary legal remedies and enforcement measures to enforce the rights of Americans impacted by crime. The rights of Americans, so-called here, is to suffer extortions of every kind, such as punishment, pain, taxes, as you can read for yourself, at 42 U.S.C. 1981, which is a municipal, federal municipal law, Title 42. But what about the crimes committed by the cops themselves with their immunities and presumed righteousness? When do people enjoy that right of accountability? It's not talked about here. No, the police are all powerful. The military police, the militarified, terrified police is what's important. And protecting them. Section 6, U.S. use of Homeland Security Task Forces. This is the Attorney General and Secretary of Homeland Security shall utilize the Homeland Security Task Force formed in accordance with Executive Order 14159 of January 20th, 2025. Oh, he's already done something, right? Protecting the American people against invasion to coordinate and advance the objectives of this order. What are his objects? He can tell you something, but is that what they really are? Is that how they administer them or execute them aggressively? In light of the ongoing national emergencies, in particular since that one fabricated in 9/11, which presumes we the people are enemies of the United States, why all these checks and balances are going on? The UN Safe Community Sustainable Development Commitment in the first section, and the latest intention to go after the homegrown, such as those protesting genocide, being defamed as anti-Semitic. These people that do this finger-pointing and these allegations are completely stupid as to what a Semitic people are. And therefore, we all these questions, what are the objectives of the order? Martial law, now with more military toys, is a safe community near you, apparently. And remember, it pretends to insist law enforcement must follow the law. But take note on that. In a military emergency, there is no law but what the military commander in the field, the district, makes up. Right, Lincoln? Old Honest Abe? Sort of like climate change, which is not about the weather. And remember, just like the Palestine problem that we're watching, there is no innocence there. The Zionists tell us that. As I say Zionists, so you think I'm just calling them names. No, it's these people are the Zionist political movement of the pre-1900s. This is a political movement you're dealing with in Palestine that tried to call itself a state of Israel, which has gotten recognition internationally. And that, as I told you before, makes every nation allowed that an accessory to genocide right now. And none of them are stopping it, which tells you something else as well with that. But we can read here, as we might see, ICE, talking about the illegals being deported, ICE sends three citizens, ages 2, 4, and 7, to Honduras. Three children under 10, all U.S. citizens, have been deported along with their mother, lawyers for a family said, including a 4-year-old who has stage 4 cancer and was removed without medication. As I read these stories, folks, I can't tell you how I'm blown away how fast what I'm telling you the week before is coming true in anticipation of what I see the word saying. It's happening so fast. And I'm still, and I guess partly why I'm so stunned to watch so-called Americans who think they know about their constitution and rights and what's supposed to go on, will applaud this sort of stuff. The U.S. officials said the mother, who were in the United States without documentation, chose to take their children when they were sent back to Honduras on Friday. They were not allowed to speak with family members, legal representatives, or doctors before being removed, the lawyer said. U.S. District Judge Terry Doherty later scheduled a May 6th hearing in one case to investigate his, quote, strong suspicion that the government just deported U.S. citizen with no meaningful process. The two families were taken into custody in New Orleans at a routine check-in under a program that lets people remain in their communities during immigration proceedings. Immigration and Customs Enforcement then took them to Alexandria, Louisiana, and placed the children and their mother on a flight to Honduras, the lawyer said. The children are 2, 4, and 7 years old. The father of the 2-year-old filed an emergency petition for her release on Thursday, which included her birth certificate, showing she was born in Louisiana, but the plane took off before the court opened the next morning. And this is another problem. You go read your laws, your courts are supposed to be open 24 hours a day. There's supposed to be a judge on call so you can do this kind of stuff. That's what's also supposed to make this place different. They ended that. Now you only have business hours. Think about what I'm talking about in commerce, what's going on. And so a birth certificate was not enough to keep her here, where it takes a real ID to get on an airplane, doesn't it? It is illegal and unconstitutional to deport, detain for deportation, and recommend deportation of a U.S. citizen, the judge pointed out. Because the women were not allowed to speak to legal representatives, quote, we have absolutely no idea whether they ever actually did give consent for their children to come with them, or if they did under what kind of duress and what other options were presented to them, said Gracie Willis, the father's lawyer. Quote, the government contends that this is all okay because the mother wishes that the child be deported with her, wrote Doughty. Who was appointed by President Trump, quote, but the court doesn't know that. So when the dear leader says so, you're out, U.S. citizen or no. We see nothing, right, Sergeant Schultz? Border czar, the U.S. didn't deport 3 children. Oh, we got the objection. Czar, folks. How does that make America great again? A czar makes America great again, don't they? Right, here we go. Controversy surrounds the fate of young American citizens sent to Honduras with their mothers. The U.S. flew 3 children who were American citizens out of the country and the Honduras with their mother last week. But were those children deported? Depends on whom you ask. Quote, no citizen child was deported, insisted Border Czar Tom Holman on CBS Face the Nation on Sunday. Deported means ordered by an immigration judge, which they denied to these people. At any rate, quote, who paid the ticket? It is clear the United States government paid the ticket. That means these children were deported, counters Charles Cuck, an immigration attorney and professor of Emory University. Quote, whether they had due process or not, whether ICE appropriately followed the rules or not, these children were deported. The question you have to ask yourself is, what's stopping this from happening to me and my kids? Is just the point I've made the last few episodes. Holman defended ICE's actions, asserting that having a child in the U.S., quote, is not a get-out-of-jail-free card for undocumented migrants. So understand, we are presumed guilty post-9/11, waiting to be caught, no due process. A father of one of the kids produced the U.S. birth certificate for the little goat, and it said all the kids were U.S. citizens. Still no due process. The problem remains the mother was in an immigration entry program to keep the family together, not in jail to get out of free from. This eliminated the need to get out of a non-existent jail. Well, unless we also understand Holman is a warden in the open-air prison known as the United States. And when he says, you goes, citizen or not, but apparently with no limit. ICE can now enter your home without a warrant to look for migrants, the DOJ memo says. But let me just memorize you the murder memo back in about 2010 I talked about. All right, here we go. Now we're administrative memos are running this place. A new memo from the Trump administration reveals something shocking. ICE agents have been told they can enter homes without a warrant to arrest migrants based on a little more than a suspicion. March 14th directive, signed by Attorney General Pam Bondi, uses the obscure 18th century law, the Alien Enemies Act of 1798, to give law enforcement nationwide the power to bypass basic constitutional protections. According to the memo, agents can break into the home if getting a warrant is impracticable, as they don't need a judge's approval. As I mentioned earlier, the term impracticable, we're going to get to it, here it is. They decide it's too much trouble. Well, I guess they don't have to get it. Well, we're going to see soon in the next tabs coming up, there's no basis for this. Trump is just doing it. And we talked about the order about loyalty. When do you know when it's lawful? Well, we're all supposed to know the law. We're not supposed to give up that knowledge of the law for ourselves to be able to identify when a crime is happening. We're supposed to vehemently stop it, arrest it, or figure out how ways to arrest it. So here we have this, using this Alien Act to get at, go after people. And we can read step 3 of this order, this memo. You get links to this. You can read it yourself. I need you to read this stuff so you see the black and white in your eyes. You don't think from your opinion. You see what the words say. You tie it together for yourself. And now you're in a better knowledge, not just an opinion, a subjective idea. Step 3, deconfliction. To the extent possible, before apprehending an alien enemy, officers should conduct standard conflict checks, DICE or DARTS. To ensure apprehending and removal the alien enemy is consistent with the interest of justice. Is not a question. How do they do that? Should is not a shall. But I'm late for donuts, I guess. You're out of luck, citizen. Then we go to page 4. Apprehension and removal procedures and reactive matters. Quote, the highlight here for me is these hesitations, these licenses. As much as practicable, officers should follow the proactive procedures above and have an executed warrant of apprehension. An executed warrant of apprehension and removal before contacting an alien enemy. This authority includes entering an alien enemy's residence to make an AEI apprehension where circumstances render it impracticable to first obtain a signed notice and warrant of apprehension and removal, which also turns out to be an administrative warrant, which are not constitutional. If Trump is really running the world, where will it take us? We now move into these directives that are coming, this loyalty that he's demanding, all without this law, and we're going to finally get to a point where what sounds like an opinion right now, me telling you what I think is going on, a judge is going to confirm relative to this alien act and its use. But Trump is going out and going to act anyway. He's going to run the world. Donald Trump thinks he's running the world. Trump revealed his plan for global dominance in a new interview with The Atlantic. He said he had rid himself of the crooked guys in investigations that limited his first term. The second term, I run the country and the world, he added. His ambition is boundless, but it also reeks of dangerous hubris and raises a grave question, where will the planet end up under the leadership of this chaotic and vengeful president? The president is attempting a massive simultaneous transformation of life in the United States and the American-led global political and economic systems that have cemented Washington's primacy since World War II. His indisputably the most ubiquitous world figure 100 tumultuous days since reclaiming the Oval Office. No one knows what he'll do next, not the U.S. allies nor its enemies. And it's this upside-down era of MAGA, foreign policy, it's sometimes hard to know which is which. From Moscow to New Delhi and Gaza to Rome, Trump has a finger in every geopolitical pie. Many foreigners might be revolted by the president, but they can't ignore him. That must be especially sweet for a commander-in-chief whose entire life has been a quest for notoriety. The reality of America's global role means that the person who has the top job has immense authority, said Majda Rouge, a senior policy fellow at the United States program at the European Council of Foreign Relations. Take Ukraine, which is on the borders of the European Union. It's practically a European issue, but the fact is that without American intelligence, military support, and American nuclear deterrence, Europeans are not able to continue supporting Ukraine to the extent that is needed for Ukraine to actually advance on the battlefield, said Rouge, who was speaking from Brussels. Quote, going back to the quote, I run the world, there is a truth to that because of America's huge, huge impact on the world politics and foreign policy. But the question is he actually running it in the direction that is constructive rather than disruptive and a little bit all over the place? And secondly, is he even running it in a strategic manner to ultimately arrive at the place he wants to go? What's the plan, folks? Just trust the plan. We don't care what the plan is. Apparently he doesn't either. Trump's supporters argue that the traditional American approaches to foreign policy brought nothing but humiliation. And I guess I have to interject on that. That may be true. That doesn't mean you then have a license to do just anything. It's not an experiment here. And there's principles you can run. And that's why I told you most of my objection to this guy. He can do this stuff. He's just not doing it correctly. Where he actually can go to where you would think he would go, where normal Americans believe we should be going. He doesn't take those paths. They remember two lost wars in Afghanistan and Iraq and think Europe built bloated welfare states under America's generous military umbrella. The president's bombast puts a lot of people off, but he often asks pertinent questions. For instance, did 2 decades of U.S. economic engagement with China buy nothing more than a 21st century superpower rival while destroying American manufacturing? Is that even a question, though? Of course it did. We saw it back in the 80s. And 80 years after the defeat of Nazism and 3.5 decades after the fall of the Soviet Union, shouldn't Europeans now be taking care of their own defenses? Nazism was defeated, folks? Operation Paperclip seemed to kind of import a whole bunch. And then to Canada. And then back to Ukraine. Anyway, move on here, reading this interesting article nonetheless. People are seeing there's a problem. I want us to be aware of it. And I ask us, as the we the people, to start taking, rolling up our sleeves. This is our job, notwithstanding what this guy wants to do. He's taking us into the future that they want, as I bring up every week now. I can't get away from it. I didn't want to talk about this guy. But here we are. This is moving seriously, almost faster than warp speed. The president made his name as a builder, but he's better at tearing things down. But barging into the center of global events and tunneling into the psyches of hundreds of millions of people with social media eruptions is hardly statesmanlike, nor is making up huge tariff rates off the top of his head. Far from enhancing U.S. power, Trump risks buckling. The problem is that Trump's approaches to addressing these questions risks undermining the security and stability of the world he professes to lead. And then there's this point. The problem is that Trump's approach to addressing these questions risks undermining the security and stability of the world he professes to lead. Let me repeat that. Let's rephrase that to include America, so-called, where his oath of office pertains, instead of the world, remembering all the things I've been exposing are wrong with Trump's unbridled hubris and flagrant disregard or the apparent subject matter ignorance that he appears to have. The problem is that Trump's approach in addressing these questions risks undermining the security and stability of the America he professes to lead to make great again. He's not making America first in his focus of ruling a world that has grown up and started deciding for itself despite the overbearing power of the United States. These nations are not called peer nations because Trump rules them. As the author notes, his bullying is forcing foreign nations to hurriedly reevaluate their relationship with the United States. That nations are forced to maneuver around the chaos Trump creates does not equate to Trump ruling the world, as he thinks. Nor will old Nick Deere committing genocide, plotting to make Gaza by the sea and water theme park from stolen land does not equate to ruling the world, and unleashing that unwarranted force, whether foreign or domestic, will not make America great again, not much different than having a little, if any, regard for the Constitution Trump took an oath to, if, for instance, working toward destroying due process, or where practicable, or instigating the great Comey swindle recently. And I have some objective authority, I would have to say, that Trump's preoccupation with ruling the world blinds him to seeing that he has forgotten he's not making America great again when he doesn't obey objective law that he took his oath to uphold. As we read, a judge says Trump's use of Alien Enemies Act unlawful, the very act that's quoted in the memo by the DOJ to practicably jump into your front door. Federal judge in Texas bans administration for deportations under wartime law in his district. Federal judge on Thursday barred the Trump administration from deporting any Venezuelans from South Texas under the 18th century wartime law and said President Trump's invocation of it was unlawful. And I could just hear all the Trumpsters, oh, that's a woke judge. Go read the law, folks, please. Divorce yourself from the party mentality, the uniparty mentality. Go read the law. U.S. District Court Judge Fernando Rodriguez Jr. is the first judge to rule that the Alien Enemies Act cannot be used against people the administration claims are gang members invading the United States. Quote, neither the court nor the parties question that the executive branch can direct the detention and removal of aliens who engage in criminal activity in the United States, wrote Rodriguez, who was nominated by Trump in 2018. But the judge said the president's invocation of the AEA through the proclamation is contrary to the plain ordinary meaning of the statute's terms. In March, Trump issued a proclamation claiming that the Venezuelan gang, Tren de Aragua, was invading the United States. He said he had special powers to deport immigrants identified by his administration as gang members without the usual court proceedings. The court concludes that the president's invocation of AEA through the proclamation exceeds the scope of the statute and as a result is unlawful. Rodriguez's ruling is significant because it is the first formal permanent injunction against the administration using AEA and contends the president is misusing the law. Quote, Congress never meant for this law to be used in this manner, said Lee Gelernt, the ACLU lawyer who argued the case in response to the ruling. Rodriguez agreed, noting that the provisions has only been used during the two world wars and the War of 1812. If you haven't read about that one, go find out what happened at that war. That's a very interesting one. It wasn't what we were told. Go read very carefully on what they did, where they came in, what that was about. Anyway, moving on here. Trump claimed Tren de Aragua was acting at the behest of the Venezuelan government, but Rodriguez found that the activities the administration accused it of did not amount to an invasion or a predatory incursion as the statute requires. If the administration appeals, it would go to first in the New Orleans-based Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals and the one of the nation's most conservative appeals court. The Supreme Court has already weighed in once on the issue of deportations under AEA. The justices held, as I've reported behind a woodshed, that the migrants alleged to be gang members must be given reasonable time to contest their removal from the country. The court has not specified the length of time. That was that notice, opportunity, time and place, due process. So as I suggested last episode, there could be a summary proceeding if it meets the due process requirements, and three minor U.S. citizens should not be in Honduras, and Venezuelans should not be in El Salvador. All this would be unnecessary chaos. It is also not making America great again. And the bigger problem with this is that all this turmoil is avoidable to very similar but just ends. So Trump comes out, again, beating his drum. It's what people appreciate about him, you know, standing up to what's going on, and that's what he's using as his cover to go do violations everywhere else. America media is compromised and corrupt, says Trump. So I'm putting this stuff together in the context of a military overthrow, wars, war powers, all these things, and I just want to throw in right here, remember, Congress allowed the modernization of the Smith Month Act, which allowed you to be propagandized to by your own government. I'll read that again. America media is compromised and corrupt. Well, yeah, Trump. Are you that ignorant? No, duh. No kidding. No kidding. It's the military you're wielding, Mr. Trump. The New York Times, Washington Post, and others are the enemy of the people, the United States president has said. So he points to them being the enemy, but he knows you are the enemy, my listener. It can be aggressively gone after, and only warrants are needed where practicable. The United States President Donald Trump has labeled American media compromised and corrupt, accusing it of publishing fake polls that understate his approval. Again, that notoriety he's after all the time. Trump's rant followed the publication of the surveys of the United States, of the New York Times and ABC Washington Post, respectively, which suggested that the support for the president was at a record low as he approached the 100th day of his second term in the White House. Quote, we don't have a free and fair press in this country anymore. We have a press that writes bad stories and cheats big on polls. It is compromised and corrupt. Sad, he wrote in a post on his Truth Social platform Monday. So what about that? Why don't you just have Congress get rid of the 2012 Smith Month Modernization Act for starters? Or is it the social media supporters need to hear whining about how helpless and persecuted this regime is against the regime that instituted it, despite having congressional advantage this year? as they are more absent than here kicking the can till September. Please keep putting this stuff together. The anomalies are stark, that there's explaining what's really going on. And speaking of corrupt promotions, this is such a deal, folks. It's coming on through. Ukraine and U.S. agreed to exempt repayment of U.S. aid for minerals deal, says Ukraine's Prime Minister. Kiev and Washington have agreed that the U.S. aid to Ukraine will not be brought up in the U.S.-Ukrainian rare earth deal as a debt obligation, Ukrainian Prime Minister Denis Shmyhal said after a meeting with the U.S. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent. Agreements have been reached that the document will not account for the U.S. aid provided prior to its signing, Shmyhal said on Telegram. So I have lots of questions on this story. Now we hear Trump is agreeing that the U.S. won't be paid after setting the stage that he would be, the United States would be completely repaid. Again, I think this is just impressing his faithful. Promises made, promises, you know, done. No, none of this is actually done. We the people are being done. So here's the thing. The United States government terrorists shouldn't be paid for its overthrow coup it caused in Ukraine in 2014. So is Trump just another syndicate fixer? Because this wheeler, dealer, stealer means none of the U.S.-Ukraine organized criminal syndicate laundering will ever need to be scrutinized or accounted for, or the application to the needs of the Ukraine in comparison, rather than those of the criminal syndicate, which appeared to indicate all global gun running and those kickbacks to Congress members are going to be washed away. And we're told a couple fat bank accounts and mentions went to Pinocchio Linsky. Gone. We don't have to do any accounting on those. And those laundering, including children, we are told, those USAID laundering and trafficking channels, are the same Trump just wiped from the existence, nixing USAID. Is he a fixer? As if he's covering everyone's tracks on this? Is that what this means? We're not looking back before? Not to mention the admitted open theft of the $50 billion derived from profits from Russia's frozen assets that Ukraine already confirmed, the Prime Minister explains there. It means that the art of the deal is a cover-up of the fraud, waste, and abuse to the American people in the U.S. government meddling with the foreign entanglements in Ukraine. Someone make a better sense of this to me, please. Because if a cover-up of all the syndicate money, weapons, organ, and children trafficking, and whatnot, laundering aid, before the signing, how does that make America great again? This is not a mineral deal. This is a pure speculation based from what known extractable reserves, not part of Russia now, meaning it's a false profit, this promotion, the triumph of hype over substance, apparently for the mindless at home. No, this is more of a geopolitical deal to harass Russia further and continuously. Right, Mr. Peace Taker? And giving us a little heads up about things sustainable, as I started the broadcast to show us, moving this through, implemented by Trump, continued, I should say, and implemented no more, it's just continuing, modifying it. Life under austerity, as Trump intends, a taste of the future that they, and apparently Trump, wants for you. Spain declares state of emergency after nationwide blackout. Declaration allows for deploying the military to maintain public order. Spain declares a state of emergency after the blackout and declared on Monday after a massive power outage plunged the entire Iberian Peninsula into darkness. Authorities are still investigating the cause. The blackout, which struck Spain and Portugal around midday, The briefly affected parts of France left millions without electricity, paralyzed public transport, and delayed flights. I'm going to add one right in there. Also interrupted and interfered with any exchange of funds to buy anything. The Level 3 National Emergency Plan allows for Army to be deployed to preserve order and security wherever it is declared in effect. I want you to think back to the warnings. We've been getting the cyber attack warnings. We've been getting on the power system in this country as well. Although the cause is not understood even till today. Sanchez stressed that there's no security problems, saying that state security forces have stepped up their presence on the streets and highways. Trump's order is going to like that, huh? The Interior Ministry said about 30,000 police officers have been deployed nationwide as the blackout stretched into the evening. The announcement came in as grid operator Red Electra, REE, said electricity had been restored in parts of Catalonia, Aragon, the Basque Country, and Andalusia, and it was working to identify the cause of the outage. Earlier, Portugal's grid operator said the rare atmospheric phenomenon over Spain triggered by extreme temperature variations may have caused the blackout. Portuguese Prime Minister Luis Montenegro later said authorities still did not know what caused the outage, but that it did not originate in Portugal, and everything indicates the problem started in Spain. Spanish officials have yet to confirm the cause. Addressing the uncertainty, Sanchez said there was no conclusive information and urged the public to avoid speculation. Okay, well, we have to still understand this. So without having an answer, we, I guess, are free to think away. And I don't say get out of whack with it, but we really have to start boring down on what's going on as Spain decides to do that, opening a probe in a major power grid failure. It's all green, folks. Remember that world they want us in. The National High Court will investigate the possibility of a cyber attack being behind the week's massive blackout. In a statement on Tuesday, Spain's High Court said Judge Jose Luis Calama had ordered preliminary proceedings to assess whether the blackout was the result of a cyber sabotage. Calama said that although the cause was still unknown, cyber terrorism is among the possible explanations. REE said Tuesday that the cyber attack had been ruled out in its initial assessment. Systems Operations Chief Eduardo Prieto told a news briefing it was possible that the disruption involved solar generation, but that it was too early to draw conclusions. What happens to be known more certain is that the outage occurred when the Spanish electricity grid suddenly experienced a 60% drop in its power generation capacity, resulting in 15 gigawatts of electricity being lost in just 5 seconds. Unable to balance the massive discrepancy between the supply and demand, the entire system went into shutdown, taking with it the interconnected Portuguese grid. Portugal's grid operator, REN, earlier said that the rare atmospheric phenomenon over Spain triggered by the extreme temperature variations may have caused the blackout, which, by the way, REN has now reportedly denied that it ever provided that information. And there's still no explanation, as I said, independently of what was over Spain, or the atmosphere, what the conditions, how that condition actually could affect the synchronicity of the grid. But, you know, it sounds cool, don't it? Rare atmospheric phenomenon. Be scared, folks. Temperature variation doesn't get it for me, though. No evidence produced to support that assertion, more than Spain enjoyed spring-like temps and calm. Or other natural phenomena might have done something like that, but no evidence yet exists for those. And further comments by REN now, really convoluted, and coincidentally, just prior, Spain suspended all arms sales and purchases with Israel, with no new authorizations for arms exports being granted. And we read a little bit more in the article. Experts say it might take weeks to determine the exact cause of the failure. Some have pointed to Spain's increasing reliance on renewable energy, particularly solar power, as a potential factor. Sanchez rejected the claims. Those linking the blackout to the lack of nuclear power are either lying or demonstrating their ignorance, he said at a press conference, which is not about solar. But as to the solar, since there is mention of system controllers in the stories, cyber attacks is really on the table despite what the power company says. The power from alternative or solar power, as I understand it, would first go through private distribution companies, not the grid operator. And isn't reported that the sun was blacked out. But there is one spectrogram that I saw shows an intense broad spectrum frequencies in the system for about 6 hours. They're about from just above 0 hertz to 40 hertz. It's just injected into the system. Being a grid synchronization problem, the power sources are likely not the problem. The distribution controllers might be. The whiplash between the cascading problem appears to be between the distribution and transmission systems, not the sources of the power. So whatever the cause, I'd like to think this is a fortuitous wake-up call. Yet again, don't rely on neo-modernity dependence for your survival. Don't rely on digital and retain cash, or better, in conjunction with cash, start using the silver and gold coin. Your life could depend on it. But be a prepper too, right? More than 3 days too, beyond what the government advises. What if the natural cause is, instead of what happened in Germany in 2006, where everyone turned on their heaters due to a cold snap, and while a power line was down to allow a ship to travel in the river that it was crossing over, that all y'all in Spain just happened to turn your power switches off all at the exact same time, and that system could not feed the power anywhere while it adjusted. Talk about asymmetric synchronicity. So to bring some context as to what it is being suggested, and to learn you here behind the woodshed, what is this induced vibration caused rare atmospheric phenomenon? And this is where you get a little bit, we get start to see some words sometimes don't really talk about it. I was thinking atmosphere, but I'm thinking, no, they're talking about a grid. So we'll see that when we get through this a little bit. It's not the atmosphere that is the problem. It's something else. It induced into a system, a hardwired system. Potential. I'm not saying it is. I'm telling you, what are they talking about when we talk about a rare atmospheric phenomenon, something that's induced vibrations? The term atmospheric induced vibration describes a physical phenomenon that primarily affects high and very high voltage transmission lines. It consists of the appearance of oscillatory movements in electrical conductors, the elevated cables we see on large towers, generated by the interaction between electrical factors and external atmospheric conditions. The process begins with certain meteorological circumstances that occur, such as sustained wind, sudden changes in temperature, or high humidity. This can lead to the appearance of what is known in electrical engineering as corona discharge, which ionizes the air around the conductor and produces small currents between the metal and the atmosphere. The charged particles thus generate and interact with the intense electrical field of the high voltage lines, which gives rise to a periodic electrohydrodynamic forces, or EHDs. Let me say these forces, these would be noise. It's just a big plasma, if you will, and it would be giving all kinds of frequencies, there's no frequency, it's all frequencies. But like white noise is white light, all frequencies, similarly. Now, whether that is what we saw in the spectrogram, I'm not so sure, because again, this is an induced condition by the atmosphere, and there's no evidence yet that the atmosphere had anything to play with it. Those forces are not mechanical in the strict sense, but rather the result of an interaction between the electricity and the atmosphere. And it's why I say calm weather alone with springtime temps as the cause doesn't do it for me. Atmospheric conditions must create, as we read, due pressure waves generated in surrounding air that directly affect the cable itself. When the frequency of these alternating forces approaches or coincides with natural vibration frequency of the conductor, the phenomenon of resonance occurs. This resonant state can greatly amplify the oscillations of the cable, causing the vibrations of considerable amplitude, even though wind or temperature conditions appear to be normal to the naked eye. So that's the induced part, induced by some environmental factor to cause physical movement. But this spectrograph indicates an electrical noise component, not the physical motion itself. So I'm still interested in that part. Very interesting, cool stuff. So, but beyond those bet-shattering odds that y'all powered down and went to lunch at the same time, that there isn't yet enough evidence to suggest the atmosphere caused the power cable movement, for it, or for instance, there was no solar activity, flares, or such of any apparent consequence anyway. What if, and more likely, something turned the power off for y'all while you were having lunch? Professor Janusz Bielak, principal researcher fellow in the Department of Electrical and Electronic Engineering at Imperial College London, explains that, quote, every early reports talk about a rare atmospheric phenomenon, but there is no information about what it was and what it caused. He goes on to explain that outages on this scale are usually triggered by multiple failures occurring at different points on the grid at the same time, which could be caused by an array of factors. Apart from faults tripping lines or power stations, it could be a malfunction of a computer system, communication network, alarm system, a human mistake, or unforeseen interaction between different controllers in the system, he said. And I don't see Mossad in that list. But what about Mossad? Any ideas what could sort of stuck next the Spanish grid there? For now, then, the cause of the colossal blackout remains unknown, the Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez stating that all theories remain on the table, including the possibility of cyber attack, which the courts picked up to start investigating. So it appears we're a click away from the Dark Ages. So never forget, you don't have to have power to still be imprisoned by the Siberian Gulag. In fact, the cells are locked down tight at that point. Quarantined. Cashless. Remember that? Either way, in the Siberian Global Gulag, with or without electricity, you are powerless. And right before that, mystery of Britain's unexplained power outages hours before Spain and Portugal blackout. Britain's electricity grid operators investigating unexplained power plant failures that hit the UK's system hours before Spain and Portugal were affected by mass blackouts. Unexplained. Not even by rare atmospheric phenomenon, folks. How you like that? So, again, I think we're giving a good eyeball on what the digital world, the electrical world, the green world, they're blaming it on solar. People have to understand that a grid system is like kind of balancing everything on a pin. There's so many variables and all that. They really are doing quite a bit. And the new green technology, the solar technology, the wind technology is not very stable. And they have to inject themselves in, and it has to be all brought in together. There can be these things, but it sounded like the professor was more in line with what my thought was when I started to hear this. And all I can say is that when we inject these new technologies in, they're going to cause us trouble. And if our lives are tied to that technology in any hard wire, if you will, a hard way, like I keep arguing we should stay and avoid the Siberian Gulag, this real ID nonsense, this ability to be tracked and traced, walking right into the prison, we open the door, we pay for it, we open the door, we lock the door behind us, and then we got a home man to deport us even to the pits of hell, I suppose. But when they decide, and they can export us wherever we want, because we put up something on a digital screen, this is not, to my mind, not going to be the world that we want to actually live in. We certainly do not want the uncertainty that we're being forced upon, and it would seem to be obvious, most people, though we didn't see that in the world with the great Kobe swindle, that most people would consider options, having options to be better. All these different sources are great. Why don't we keep our options open? Just like the fossil fuels that we need. Fossil fuels do something. They have their purpose. You want to cut them down because of pollution? That's one thing. It's quite a different problem. And understand, the power went down. Anybody that had a diesel generator fired up. And so why aren't the options more important than somebody's idea of making something more efficient and technologically advanced? I think we have enough room in the world to have all of it, actually. And so we have a better predictability in the world. And anybody who's telling us different is probably our enemy. the enemy of the people, globally. So let's use this. I thought it was fascinating. It's neat stuff to my mind as far as the physics behind it, understanding the grid operation. It's a really complicated thing, actually, with all these different sources. And how we take that for granted, actually. Having to run a generator, it's kind of funny, in the other direction. There's a power outage, I don't see it anymore. So that's another thing that's been going on. Now, it's much more expensive than if I didn't have to run the generator, and I can only run it for a certain amount of time. I can't afford the rest of it, but I've made it work. And yet, there's a power outage around me, and with my own power source, I don't even know it, actually. And so for even us, this green technology, solar panels, solar systems, may offer us a little bit more of the non-dependence that we're looking for while the world tries to make us dependent. And catastrophically so, it seems to me. All of Spain got taken down, all of Portugal and some of France. Fascinating, over just a moment. And nobody knows why. Nobody knows why. We just make it up. And yet it all got powered back up. It didn't take but a short time. And that made sense to me too. Think about that. Nothing actually happened to the system. They just shut it down and had to resynchronize it, refire it back up in order. And it all came back. Nobody fixed anything. So what stopped, what interfered with that power? For just that split moment, for 5 seconds, everyone's life shifted. And then we have the little anomalies of going on in the world, the interesting little legislation that Spain just did. And we see the Stuxnet in the past, and we wonder, well, maybe our lives are even more tenuous. It's not a joke about these cyber attacks. We can be dismissive of them, but that's more like government just trying to hide through the cat box cover-up of a vulnerability they don't want people to understand. Because if you understood that was your vulnerability, maybe you would become non-dependent. Oh, horrors. This is BTWRLM 626. I'll be with you next week. Tech Tiffs, or nature willing.
Echoes call, the hour is near. Behind the woodshed, the truth you'll hear. Every Sunday, the clock strikes three. Hal's voice rolls like thunder, fierce and free. Pull up a chair, lean in close, lessons to learn. Dose by dose, behind the woodshed, no stone unturned. Next week, heed the call, behind the woodshed standing tall.